Hi there, I'm K-Town, and on this edition of Mysterious Radio.
I am based in the Philippines. I was born in the UK, raised in New Zealand and Australia, and I've been in the Philippines for the last 10 years. And I am the CEO and founder of Outsource Accelerator, which is the world's largest marketplace connecting businesses across the world with the $250 billion global outsourcing industry.
Do you feel like, from your point of view, can you just tell us why that's happening? And a lot of people that I talk to as far as outsourcing, are you talking about directly outsourcing jobs overseas or to other countries?
Sure. Yeah, good question. And I appreciate you inviting me here to discuss this. What we are going to see over the next 20 years is the biggest seismic shift in how businesses employ people and how the global workforce organizes itself. There, it is going to be like you generally cannot fathom how big the changes will be. That stems from the fact that we are technology and communications, as everyone knows, has advanced tremendously in the last 20 years. You go back 20 years ago, and basically no one was online. We were not using computers all that much. It was still very much a paper and office-based society. Fast forward 20 years to today, and now everything is digital, everything is online. And you only have to look at the younger generations, like the millennials. They are doing everything from their computer, from their phone, including social things like dating and chatting and talking and forums and things like that. This digital interface means that the previously physical confines of work and the workforce have been broken down. And now it means that people from all over the world, from wherever you are sitting, you can contribute and get a job anywhere else in the world. And it's because of this decoupling of where you are physically sitting to how you can contribute and work is changing the way that workforces are organizing themselves. And this technological interface is allowing people to work globally instead of locally. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense.
This is only going to change, it's only going to sort of get bigger.
Yeah. And you know what? That brings me to mind, Derek, when I went to Atlanta, I forgot when we went down there. Oh, yeah. My wife had surgery. Okay. So she had surgery down there. Right. And so I'm looking across. I'm actually downtown Atlanta. I think we were staying at the Ritz Carlton downtown. But I look across. There's like, there's tall buildings everywhere. But you could see straight through them and they were totally empty. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, are all these people working from home? So I'm wanting to ask you, do you feel like this is like a Pandora's box coupled with COVID? I'm talking about coupled with COVID and everybody making this shift to doing everything online. I mean, even like you talk to people like their grandmothers and things, they're forced to do things online where, they didn't have to do that before. So everything's online now. So do you think COVID, coupled with, people just wanting to do stuff online is quicker, it's easier, you don't have to go anywhere to do it, if that's opened some type of Pandora's box?
Yeah, I think we're in an experiment that no one has ever run before, and we're running with the experiment without knowing the results. And we're only going to know the results in sort of 10, 20, 30 years, and it's quite incredible. Look, the COVID obviously advanced things. They say, it advanced these things 20 years in 2 years. And it certainly pushed everyone into a remote first reality. Parts of remote I don't necessarily agree with. I think you can have far better working environments if people are collaborating together in the office. I'm not like a remote maximalist. But what it does is, It gets you out of your local confine. Instead of, you know, New York's a big city, Atlanta's a big city, but instead of only being able to employ from your local catchment, which, you know, is maybe 100,000 people, businesses now can employ globally, and there's 8 billion people across the world. And also on top of that, you know, the vast majority of countries are significantly cheaper, you know, where you can typically save sort of 70 to 90% on salary costs. So it's, you know, it empowers businesses to hire more and to produce more and things like that. But it will create a really significant change in how the workforce organizes itself. In terms of, you know, office buildings being empty, yeah, you know, that's a slightly different problem. But I believe that is a really critical problem for the economies generally. You know, I think there could be a really significant collapse once all of the leases come to an end, and once the mortgages, you know, become distressed. I think that that could cause a huge issue for the economy, and that's something that is going to be worked through over the next 5 years now.
Do you see the change as something good? You said it's going to bring about a huge change, but you're not saying whether or not it's a good change or a bad change.
Look, the jury's out. I'm fundamentally an optimist. And with progress and change, you know, you have to break eggs to make omelets. And generally, I believe that we are progressing to a far better future where people have more wealth opportunity generally. But that doesn't mean that people, individuals, can get caught in this transition. And if you know, are holding the wrong deck of cards in that transition, then it can hurt the individuals. Things will undoubtedly change because the whole way that the workforce, it is now becoming a global workforce. And, you know, this should not come as a surprise. It's kind of surprising. Because before, we have always had borders and we've had very strict rules, and America identifies as America and no one can get in without, you know, a pass from the government saying you are allowed in. And that is how historically we have always controlled our labor migration and workflows. And every country does that. Now, two things have changed. Sort of about 50 years ago, labor stayed localized, but what happened was manufacturing went global. And, you know, so while labor stayed in the same country, manufacturing was done somewhere else in a cheaper country like China, which then enabled Americans to access effectively Chinese labor in the form of products. Okay, so you were still benefiting from Chinese labor, but it was in the form of products. With this more recent change with technology, with communications, instead of, you know, everything being in products, the economy is moving more towards services. And these can be done now by people sitting in a different location, sitting in front of a computer. And what that has done, these sort of communication technology changes, is it nullifies the borders. Okay, before you could control labor migration by physical borders, but now that everyone is working online, these borders become almost irrelevant. So, you know, Wall Street, which is sort of in some respects the pride of American capitalism, can now be run by, you know, Indian IT gurus sitting in Mumbai, and you know, Filipino customer service agents running the phones. And you don't actually need any Americans sitting on Wall Street running Wall Street. It's really quite incredible. And this has been happening like the last 5-10 years. I think COVID has maybe amplified that another sort of 10 years. But over the next 10 years, 10 to 20 years, I believe there's going to be able to have another 40 million jobs going offshore. It's really quite dramatic.
Let me ask you this.
Also an opportunity.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And what you said is so interesting. I wanted to know, like, I only know what's happening here in the United States, and it seems like we've never really bounced back from COVID. Everyone is still, you know, working at home, even though you can read online, you know, where CEOs are calling for their people to come back in to the office. I'm wondering, you know, overseas, are you seeing, are they coming back to the office, or is it mostly the majority of people still working from home?
You know, I'm based in the Philippines. Every country, every city is different, but generally you will find that because the world is connected now, everyone watches YouTube, Netflix, everyone reads the same kind of stuff. So you find a lot of the kind of cultural elements of the globe are quite united now. So, you know, there's kind of the rise of the woke in the US, there's the Great Resignation, you know, all of that is happening in the Philippines as well. And you see a lot of alignment between, you know, the sort of generalizations of the millennials in the US to the generalizations of the millennials in the Philippines. So the world is becoming quite homogenous. And, you know, a lot of workers don't want to go back into the office. They feel it's better for them to work at home. But then the employers want people to go back to the office. So, you know, there's that. It's quite a universal, I think, tension between both sides.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So all of that is quite homogenized. But what isn't homogenized is the economics of countries. And I don't want to go too deep, but to paint it simply, you know, a sort of typical salary in the US might be $60,000 per year, just using rough numbers. A typical salary in the Philippines might be $6,000 per year. Okay. And, you know, that is a roundabout equivalent. Now, before sort of people say, oh my God, that's slave labor, that's exploitation, that's not a living wage, the Philippines is also about 10 times cheaper to live. Okay. So the $6,000 goes almost as far as the $60,000. And so when you combine the workforces and then suddenly there's US businesses saying, hold on, why am I hiring a remote worker in New York when I can hire a high caliber remote worker in the Philippines and I am saving 90% on the salary? And, you know, that is where things dramatically change. That's where sort of you get this seismic shift in workforce trends.
Yeah, and I do want to talk to you about that too. I'm going to talk about the conditions and everything that they are working in over there. I wanted to ask you, like, you know, I totally understand the business side of it. They want to save money, so they outsource jobs to people that are willing to make less money with the same caliber of talent, if not, you know, more talented over there. But then you have the domino effect, like I'm seeing here in Knoxville, where, you know, all the little small, you know, shops and lunch places and things, they're getting hit hard and then they're shutting down, and it's happening like over and over and over again. They can't stay in business because, you know, where you had all these people that worked in offices, you know, they counted on that revenue to come in so that they can keep their doors open, and they just can't because there is a shift to people working from home and they just don't go to these places anymore. I mean, where do you see the balance so that we don't harm small businesses?
Yeah, look, it's going to be a tragic shift for some people. I don't think that there is any avoiding that harsh reality. You know, there are countless examples in past history. Before cars were horse and carts, and there were entire industries around maintaining horses, you know, even the farriers that replaced horseshoes. And obviously, as the automobiles came through, that wiped out all of that industry. Before you had automobiles, you had the steam engines. Before the steam engines, you had canal boats, and all of these industries actually employed, you know, millions of people and were huge economic drivers. And you lost the horse and cart, you lost the canals, you lost the steam engines, and now automobiles seem to be kind of in vogue. But as Elon Musk introduces driverless cars, then you're probably going to lose all of the, you know, truck driver income, which, you know, the drivers in the US constitute about 4 million employees. Like, it's a massive part of the economy. So all of these things go. You've also seen it in the US with, you know, many times before, like Detroit is a sort of clear example of, you know, when that was a bustling car-making economy, that was the heyday. But then inevitably, things moved on, and Detroit, you know, has really struggled. You see that with coal mining towns in the, you know, they have a heyday, and then it struggles. And unfortunately, this is sort of the organism of life, in that you have these ups and downs. But, you know, I do not, you know, and this is the experiment that we're in. If every city center dies because humanity is sort of reshuffling itself, not around city centers, but around, you know, sort of rural pastime lives, then it could cause incredible economic distress to the entire economy, you know, and it would really cause dramatic change. Now, I don't know if people, for example, people are attracted to the hubbub of New York, and I don't know if they didn't need to go there for jobs, would the youth still be attracted, because there's comedy, there's, you know, creativity, there's music, there's dating, there's restaurants. So will these cities just become sort of fun fairs? You know, and there's still large arguments for that. I love living in big cities, but it's really going to change everything if, you know, every office block is considered null and void. You know, that will really change the skyline of the city, and then also every sort of economic underpinning of these cities. So I don't know where it's going
to
go.
Yeah, it's really scary, and I hate to see that happening, you know, because I'm telling you, in the last 6 months, I've seen businesses that have been open 100 years shut down. Just so shocking. I wanted to ask you about the work from home conditions. You're in the Philippines. I don't know how it is over there, but if companies from the United States are hiring these freelance workers to work from home over there, are they asking them, you know, like, how is your home conditions? Do you have high speed internet? I mean, how are they? Do you know how they're vetting their ability to even work online properly, and if they have the means to even do it?
Yeah, so, you know, the Philippines is a big place. There's 110 million people, and the outsourcing industry has been going about 30 years. It's a $250 billion industry. So outsourcing is a big umbrella term, and the closest thing you can think of it, it's really the same as employment in the US. And if I say, tell me about employment in the US, well, it's very diverse. You get part-time students, which is employment. You get interns, you get contractors, you get you know, part-timers, you get full-time people, you get consultants, and you also then get agencies. And also in the US, you get freelancers. Okay, and so, you know, if you meet someone in a park or a bar and say, can you do a little bit of work for me, you know, and they're having a beer at 2 p.m., then that kind of worker is like, you know, good luck to you. I hope it goes well. Whereas if you sort of see a Wall Street banker walking into Wall Street, he's wearing a pinstripe suit and he's got his little satchel, you know, and you know that he's been to Harvard, then that is a different caliber of worker. No judgments on either of them, but that spectrum is also available in the Philippines. Now, a lot of people associate the Philippines with virtual assistants, which is these freelancers which work from home, and there's a lot of bad stories about them because they don't have high quality of work. Then that is a little bit like getting the university student that you met in a bar to do a little bit of work for you. Whereas there's also people in the Philippines that are highly professional, that have master's degrees. You know, there are people in the Philippines that have graduated from Harvard, from Stanford. You know, so there is the full spectrum in the Philippines. also within the Philippines, there is this massive outsourcing industry, which contributes about 15% to the GDP. It's the single biggest industry. And you would not believe the sophistication of this industry. They are in tall, shiny glass buildings. They have 100% uptime. They're completely off-grid if they need to be. They have some of the most sophisticated operations in the world. The offices are very similar to Google in that they would have free buffets, they would have table tennis tables, sleeping pods, and they do some of the most sophisticated work. Now, what is also sort of, you know, people associate the Philippines with basic virtual assistants, but every, I would say about 99% of the Fortune 500 in the US are powered in some way by Filipino workers. Okay.
I can vouch for that. I call Home Depot and their customer service agents are in the Philippines. I call my bank, they're in the Philippines. I mean, everybody's over there.
And Facebook and Google.
Yeah,
and,
everybody.
You know, all of the big guys are over here. So very powerful.
Let me ask you something. Are there any jobs coming the other way? Like from maybe, I don't know. I mean, are they outsourcing American workers or even people in Australia or England or anything like that? Have you seen them come in the opposite direction?
Look, global trade, again, I don't know whether it's just because I'm optimistic, but I see a singularity coming where there's one global economy. Now, you go, oh my God, you know, how am I going to be safe? Or how is Atlanta or how is the US going to be safe? Time and time again, history, well, networks are far more powerful the bigger they are. So, you know, if you live in a small town in the back end of the US with 10,000 people, generally there are not many opportunities there. There are not good universities there. There are not good hospitals there compared to New York, where there's about 9 million people, and you know that it has the best universities, it has the best theater, it has the best creativity, and same with LA and the other main centers. That is because there is a network effect, and where many people come together and collaborate, then it creates better things. So if you expand that out, you know, the US has a great network effect because it's 300 people cooperating to some degree with each other. But what happens when the world of 8 billion people collaborates and cooperates with each other truly openly and creates a true network, then actually everyone will benefit far more. And I think that's what we are heading towards, in that, you know, there's just going to be an enhanced level of cooperation and creativity as we go forward. And that will only benefit everyone within that network.
That's interesting that you say that. I mean, I haven't heard that exactly. You know, I heard that these jobs leaving like the United States are actually hurting Americans. But it's good to hear your perspective. I also want to talk to you about AI and automation, which is a huge deal. I don't know if you've been watching the news, but right now the movie industry, they're on strike. And this hasn't happened since the 80s, but apparently AI has been used heavily in that industry and putting some of the writers and things, their jobs are in jeopardy. So do you see AI at some point maybe replacing some of these workers?
Yeah, inevitably. Technology is unstoppable, unfortunately. And I think, you know, there's been no example where we can put any genie back in a bottle. And, you know, it creates disruption. I do not know the outcome of this AI evolution. There are strong arguments that it could actually cause the demise of humanity. There are equally strong arguments that it could, you know, solve every problem we have. If you reach a level of general superintelligence, then in theory, every problem we have on Earth could be solved, whether that is hunger or cancer or gravity or energy or, you know, environmental depletion. sort of potentially every problem can be immediately solved. So, you know, but also it could cause the demise of humanity. In the shorter term, are jobs going to be replaced? I think absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, but millions of jobs have been lost over the last sort of few hundred years as society has been evolved, and they have always been replaced with new jobs. But, you know, I don't know if that will continue to happen. Really, the jury is out on that. It is quite incredible, the sort of potential power of this AI. Yeah,
it's scary too. I mean, I've been listening to both sides of the argument. So, I wanted to ask you about, you said that the buildings over there sound very impressive. I'm going to get online and see if I can look at some of those, but you said they're very sophisticated. And you said also they have the capability of working totally off grid. So you saying that, well, let me say this. I know that over here, I think it was in North Carolina, there's a couple of counties over there where people were actually shooting at the power grid or these transformers that keep power, you know, going. So the FBI was investigating, and of course that would be a very serious problem. So that has been, you know, a point of concern for people. Now they're like, okay, everything's online, but what happens, you know, if we lose power and we can't get it back? So has that been something that you talk to clients about? How to protect themselves from any kind of attack on the power grid at all?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the Philippines has two problems. One, it truly is an emerging economy. So once you step out of these glass towers, you know, the provinces of the Philippines really are very almost subsistence living, you know. And so the infrastructure is relatively weak in the Philippines. So things like electricity and the internet and roads and things like that. It is getting better, but sort of 10 to 20 years ago, you know, you would have brownouts and you could not rely on the infrastructure. So the outsourcing industry, which obviously needs complete uptime, would build in its own redundancies and generators and things like that. And that is really just as a result of living or being within an emerging economy.
You're saying that our sense of remote work for us is at home, but over there, because they don't have the infrastructure, they're actually in those buildings, these nice buildings with all this great technology and things.
Correct. Like, okay, yeah, okay. You know, there is, before, with emerging economies, there's no middle class. Like, you have an elite and then you have poor. The outsourcing industry has developed the middle class. So there is a growing middle class in the Philippines, you know, and they have reasonable accommodation, but it varies, you know, and there's no getting away from the reality that a lot of the Philippines is quite basic, you know. But again, it comes down to what is the profile of the employee that you're employing and what is their sort of house like. So you have to sort of do things properly, because that, if you don't, then you can get disappointed by results. But also, the Philippines has, it's on a fault line, so not too dissimilar to LA, I believe, but there's a lot of earthquakes, so there's a lot of preparedness for, you know, earthquakes and things like that. So that's why a lot of these buildings are built hyper secure and off the grid, backups and generators and things like that.
Really? I didn't know that. I didn't know that. That's interesting. They haven't suffered anything major over there, have they?
No, a lot of typhoons. I mean, we regularly have earthquakes, but nothing major, but we have a lot of typhoons, and a lot of those can also disrupt services and obviously, you know, a lot of loss of life and things like that. So it's, yeah.
You mentioned Google and did you say Apple was over there? Are they outsourcing?
Yeah, I don't know, actually. But I assume they would be. I mean, I know I've personally gone to the AWS, you know, Amazon office. I've been to Google, Facebook's here. All of the big players are here. Really?
And I'm interested in, like, it sounds like they got brilliant people over there. How, I mean, are they, do you see that they, their wages are coming up? I mean, if you're able to get your hands on that kind of talent, how are they still able to pay them such low wages?
Yeah, look, it's a very complex question. What I want to emphasize is $500 a month in the Philippines, a month for a full-time graduate is a reasonable wage. It's a good wage. Now, of course, everyone wants to earn more. You know, you ask anyone in LA or New York, and it's like, of course, I need to earn more because it's very expensive to live here. But $500 is a reasonable monthly salary, or $6,000 per year is a reasonable salary for, you know, a graduate with a degree with sort of 2 or 3 years experience. Now, living costs are significantly cheaper. And, you know, there are vast numbers of people in the Philippines that earn about $200 per month. You know, it's a sad reality, but by bringing jobs over to the Philippines, you're not exploiting poor people. You're actually giving them an incredible economic opportunity to join the global economy. So it is only positive. In terms of salary inflation, the Philippine economy is growing at about 6 to 7% per year, which is similar to China, year on year on year, which is huge growth. That is that's around about double the growth of normal economies, like, you know, mature economies like the US and UK and things like that. So they are seeing incredible growth, but also, you know, with salary inflation, if the, you know, sort of the US might have salary inflation of about 3% per year. If the Philippines grows at 6% per year, so double the growth of salary growth, it will still take them 90 years to catch up with American salaries. 90 years, okay? And then you also have a lot of structural stuff that is keeping salaries lower. For one, you know, it's much cheaper in the Philippines. But for another, the Philippines, which is a very good thing, has a very young population. It's a sort of proudly Catholic country. It has high birth rates. And while that is a burden when the children are young, when the children become working age, they become, you know, massive engines of growth for the economy. But that also then keeps salaries a little bit lower. Whereas the problem with the US and most developed economies is they actually have a negative birth rate, and then no one's going to be able to support all of the retirees as they get older and all of the pension obligations and stuff like that. So the Philippines is actually coming into a very strong economic period for itself. Conversely, China, where they had the one-child policy, is going to really struggle because they have a very old population and will need to support their old people. So there's a lot of factors involved. You know, the Philippines generates about 750,000 college graduates every year. So, you know, there's a huge volume of people coming through the system ready to work and would love a job at sort of $500 to $1,000 a month. Love a job at $500 to $1,000 a month. You know, and so it's a great opportunity. But also then it's an opportunity for the US businesses, because if you can get great staff for that, then most business owners don't just, you know, go to the beach and buy a Ferrari. They reinvest that money. They reinvest the money into their business. They grow faster. They build new products, which goes back into the economy, goes back into the American economy. They make more profits. They pay more tax. They're hiring more Americans as well. And so it's a virtuous cycle. It's not just, you know, America gets gutted. Generally, it is a very positive feedback kind of cycle.
Are they also saving on training costs some kind of way by doing that?
You know, no, it's very similar. Outsourcing is basically identical to employment. You know, like people some people are motivated, some people aren't, some people, you know, quit and jump around jobs, some people are great employees. To get really good employees, you have to invest in them, you have to, you know, have a good culture, you have to have someone on board a few years before they really start shining. All of the principles of running a successful offshore team is really identical to the principles of running a good onshore team and having a good culture and treating people well. And, you know, and that's another thing as well. You know, you need people to feel good about their job and about the work they are doing. And if people have this perspective of perception of, you know, people are being exploited over here and it's slave labor, no way. You cannot get people to work. You know, maybe in a factory, if they're pressing a button on a machine, you can. But if they're developers, if they are designers, if they, you know, are accountants, if they're customer service, they need to have their head in the game. They need to be wanting to win for the company, and they need to be on board culturally. There's just no way around it. You know, you need to treat people well.
Is that happening anywhere that you know of, where they're outsourcing and it's just like horrendous conditions that they're working in?
Yeah, I can point to a lot of companies in the US.
Absolutely. What are they? Name them or no?
No, I can't. But ProPublica.
Okay. All right.
No. But ProPublica, which is a sort of a left-wing investigative journalism, they wrote a long piece, an expose on US-based, home-based call centers. And it was a bit of a multi-level marketing scam where in order to become a home-based, you had to buy a franchise. And it's this massive scam, and there's a lot of Americans caught up in this. So go to ProPublica. It's a fantastic piece, and it's an expose on Americans mistreating Americans. You know, it happens everywhere in the world, but hopefully those things do not proliferate. And hopefully, in principle, if you do things well and you treat people well, then, you know, you prosper.
Yeah. Let's hope not. Hope that doesn't continue. And I hope there's a resolution to that, because that is just awful to do that to anybody. Yeah. Let me ask you something about, I'm always wondering about medical benefits and if that's a catalyst to actually reaching out to someone to outsource overseas or offshore. Is it? I mean, obviously they're not paying Americans and, you know, you don't have to, you know, offer the same medical benefits. It is very, very expensive for companies. I do understand that. But is that a point of concern or reason why they choose to do it, to save on those costs?
Yeah, I think so. In the Philippines, it's actually, there's very, you know, I speak about the Philippines because I live here and I've been here 9 years, but we also represent, you know, all of the outsourcing nations like India and Colombia, but I'll speak to the Philippines. The Philippines has very strong labor laws. There are very strong processes in place to make sure that the employees are well looked after. It's actually quite left-wing and quite draconian, far stronger than the US in terms of sort of labor relations.
I'm shocked by that, actually.
You know, it's, so on top of a person's salary in the Philippines, there is about 20 to 25% of government contributions, which is things like, you know, the government pension fund, employers' taxes, and then also HMO, which is the private insurance. The system in the Philippines works very similarly to the system in the US. A lot of the Philippines is actually based on sort of US principles. The HMO is relatively expensive, but it is so. But what you're getting, so, you know, it's about a 20 to 25% levy on top of the person's salary to cover all of these government contributions and healthcare. And that 25% does not go to anyone other than the government or the healthcare. But what you find, you know, and it's probably very similar in the US, in that if you add everything up, it's around about 25%. But you're talking about 25% on top of a $500 salary, not 25% on top of a $6,000 salary. Do you know what I mean? So just everything is proportionately more affordable.
And let me ask you, this is my last question I wanted to ask you. Derek, are there remote workers in any, I know you can speak to the Philippines, but what about other countries? I'm imagining, you know, the pay rate's not the same. I mean, are some remote workers making more than others?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the OGs of outsourcing are really the Philippines and India. Then you have a couple of big players near shore, which is, you know, obviously in sort of Central and South America. Colombia is pretty big in that regard. But you now have all of the emerging economies. And, you know, this is why I say there's a tidal wave coming. All of the emerging economies are realizing the gold mine of this opportunity, and they are all gearing up and they are all contacting me. So places like Jordan, Fiji, Uzbekistan, Kenya have all reached out to me recently saying, you know, they want to get on this outsourcing bandwagon. And you will soon find every emerging economy entering into this global economy. And just to reiterate what, you know, the way that I earlier described it, previously, these countries were locked out of a functioning global economy. And these poor citizens that, by no fault of their own, were born in a place like Kenya with a sort of, you know, relatively dysfunctional economy, could not get a start. And they weren't allowed to leave their country because of border controls. And so they are confined to the economic reality of their country or even their sort of crappy little village that no one ever escapes from. But now that you have the internet and with a laptop, those people, if they have the capability and skill, they can get a job anywhere in the world. Now, you know, if the average salary in Kenya is $200 or $300 a month, if they have the capability, they can apply for a job on Wall Street for $20,000 a month. All power to them. That is incredible. You know, and you are finding now that every country is realizing that in isolation, their economy is very small, very fragile, and is hard to get going. But if they can tap into and contribute to the global economy, and it no longer takes migration to do that, they can just do that by opening up their internet, then, you know, it's a powerful, powerful opportunity. So you will see, you know, you will see it coming through. But like anything, you know, do you trust the, you know, so the Philippines and India have been doing it for 30 years. They are the grandfathers of the industry. And with that, they have a lot, you know, they have sort of three generations of executive talent now. They have senior leadership. They've been there, done that. Whereas the emerging economies, they're kind of learning the gig themselves. So there's pros and cons. They can be cheaper. I mean, you only have to look to Venezuela, you know, and it's an absolute friggin' tragedy what's happened over there to their economy. But, you know, their economy has disintegrated. And if you could give someone a job earning $200 per month, they would bite your hand off. And is that exploitation or is that a really good friggin' deal because they are starving in the streets? Do you know what I mean? And you have to, it's a really difficult discussion, but if they can contribute and if you can get them an internet connection and they can contribute, then, you know, all power to them. You know, it's tragic that some people just are born in a crappy country or with a crappy leader that destroys their economy. You know, and you also see that with, Russia and, but anyway, so, you know, both of them, Ukraine, you know, both of them, both of the citizens are caught in such unfortunate condition. Neither of the citizens of either of those countries ever asked for this war, you know, and it's sad, but potentially people can get online and sort of exist, in isolation of their leaders' folly decisions, you know?
Yeah, so. You know what? And that just brings to mind, I was looking for some, because I outsource, you know, workers to help us with our podcast. Nice. And I forgot the name of the app that I use, but I'll look at it and I'll try to say it while I'm talking to you. But they had like a little message up there that said that they were not going to allow people from, I think it was Russia, not to allow Russia to actually participate. It's, I can't think of the name of the app. Anyway, because they were supporting the Ukrainian people. And so I hated that because you're right, they didn't ask for it.
Unfortunately, the U.S. government has put in the embargoes and stuff on Russians. And
oh, okay, so they can't do it.
Companies like it or not, they're almost forced to boot Russians off their systems. I mean, I've got a good friend in the Philippines. She's about 32. She's a professional. She's worked hard all of her life. She's saved money and she invested about, you know, $100,000 in the US stock market. And she's Russian. And when the Russian war started, her money has been locked up and she will probably never get that back.
You got to be kidding me. Wow.
Yeah. It's tragic. But when you look at individual cases, it's just tragic. And, you know, she doesn't want that war any more than anyone else. But, you know, she's lost all of her life savings and it's unfair.
I hate that. I really hate to hear that. Derek, it sounds like, you know, your business is booming and good for you. It was great to talk to you to give us some type of perspective on outsourcing. And, you know, I know there's going to be casualties and hopefully people will do what they need to do in order to maintain their livelihood. But it seems like it's on a trajectory where we just have to wait and see what happens. You know, like you said, you know, you don't know where it's going to go. Hopefully, you know, we come out on the other side of it and everyone is good after it's all said and done. I want you to take a moment to tell my listeners where they can keep up with you or any other projects that you may be working on.
Yeah, sure. I mean, our website is outsourceaccelerator.com. It's a little bit like TripAdvisor for the outsourcing industry. We list about 2,500 outsourcing firms representing about 10 million employees on that website. It's free. If you're interested in outsourcing, you can submit for a free quote. It's completely free. So just go along. We have about 15,000 articles on there. We also have a podcast called the Outsource Accelerator Podcast. So it's, yeah, really just, you know, we are the information hub and marketplace for the outsourcing industry. So if anyone is interested and if anyone is sort of vehemently opposed to what we do or have any comments, like feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. It is a very polarizing topic, I know, but it is happening, and you know it will happen. You cannot stop this sort of the tide coming in. So yeah, happy to chat.
The book is called Inside Outsourcing: How Remote Work, Offshoring, and Global Employment is Changing the World. Derek Gallimore, my special guest. Derek, many blessings to you, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.